I don't know how many people here just know the traditional Buddhist types of meditation. But in the tradition, there are two types of meditation. Who knows the names of those two types of meditation? I warned you last night. Never answer a question. There's always trick questions. No. The two types of meditation are second noble truth meditation and third noble truth meditation. I always like, because I'm a Buddhist monk, to keep the meditation instructions according to the basic teachings of Buddhism. And the second noble truth is wanting, craving is a cause of suffering. So if you get frustrated in the meditation, if you are suffering, why? Because you've been craving, wanting something. That is why you're not satisfied. And third noble truth meditation is, third noble truth, you let go of wanting. Give it up. And that's the cause for enlightenment, for nirvana, the highest happiness. So if you are getting content and happy, that means you're doing the letting go meditation. As the Buddha said, the third noble truth meditation. So that's why I prefer those two. But there are these people who kept saying, no, Samatha meditation is better than Vipassana. Vipassana is better than Samatha. So I have this story that there was this couple, Sam and his partner, Vi. Sam Atta and Vi Passana. And one day after lunch, Sam and Vi decided to go up Meditation Mountain. And Sam wanted to go up there because it was so peaceful on Meditation Mountain. Vi, she went up there because she could see forever on the top of the mountain. So she brought her, not these iPhones, but this Canon, a special, really expensive camera. And because they were going up there, their two pets had a cat and a dog. The cat was called Metta. The dog was called Anapanasati. So, Vi Passana and Sam Atta with Metta the dog, so Metta the cat and Anapana the dog. Why did they go up there for? Cats and dogs are smart. They don't go up there for any reason. They just go up there because it's fun. So, Sam and Vi and Metta and Anapana started walking up Meditation Mountain. When they got only halfway up, Sam was so peaceful. Even halfway up Meditation Mountain, oh, it was so still. And Vi, she was taking so many insight shots because she could see such large, long distances. And little Metta the cat, they're both dogs. No, I got this mixed up. No, okay, the wrong way around. The Metta the dog and Anapana the cat. There we go. Metta the dog and Anapana the cat. So, halfway up, Metta the dog, she was wagging her tail. She was so happy halfway up Meditation Mountain. And Anapana the cat, you know what cats are like. Sometimes you can't even find them. They were hiding somewhere. I don't know about here in the US, but in our monastery, the coolest place in the monastery during the hot weather, you always know that's where the cat is sleeping. Always knows the cool places and the warm places. So Anapana, the cat, was almost disappeared halfway up Meditation Mountain. And when you got to the top of Meditation Mountain, It was so still. Absolutely peaceful. But Sam Atter, even though he went up there for the stillness, still he had a pair of eyes and he could see forever. As far as Vi was concerned, on the top of Meditation Mountain, oh, she took some amazing photographs. What you probably see on the cover of National Geographic. Amazing insight shots of all over the world. And Vi Pasna also could feel the deep peace as well. As far as Metta the dog, she was running around in circles, wagging her tail like it's going to go off, fall off. You know when dogs are really ecstatic? And as for Annapurna, the cat, she had disappeared. Because on the top of Meditation Mountain, your breath vanishes. Loving kindness, metta, the insight and the stillness all coexist. You cannot split them up on top of a Meditation Mountain. And it's because of that that sometimes when I have a student, I usually start them off on just letting go. And if after a while they get frustrated, it doesn't work, then I teach them Anapanasati. And if they can't do Anapanasati, then I teach them breath meditation. And if they can't do breath meditation, I teach them loving kindness. If they can't do loving kindness, they get fed up with that, I teach them metta meditation. If they can't do metta meditation, I teach them insight meditation. If they can't do insight, then I teach them vipassana. And if they can't do vipassana, then I teach them letting go. By that time, they forgot that's where they started. And the reason why I do this is because they're all the same. You can't split them up. It's all learning how to let go and be peaceful, be still, be kind. So that is why when people start to say, what type of meditation do you do? That is a lot of bullshit. You don't really worry about that. It's just learning how to be peaceful and how to be still. So, simile number two. This is, again, it is a beautiful simile of how meditation works and why it works. And it is a simile of the thousand-petaled lotus. You know the great Vajrayana mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. How many people know what it means? It's just the two inside words, Mani Padme. It's exactly the same as Pali Sanskrit in this area. It's the jewel, the treasure in the heart of the lotus. Do you know what that treasure is? I will now describe it to you. So, a lotus is a symbol of Buddhism. And there's two reasons for that. I'm just going to go off subject a little bit, a nice piece of advice. A lotus. If you have a lotus and someone urinates all over that lotus, they pee on it. All that stinky urine just falls off it, and once it's dripped off the lotus still smells as sweet and pure as it did before. The stinky urine leaves no residue. And if then somebody comes by and pours Chanel number 5 over that lotus, that too all drips off, and the lotus still smells like a lotus. Not like Melanie Trump. Is that right? I'll be careful here again. I'm going to get rendered to Guantanamo Bay. Because a lotus, nothing sticks to a lotus. And that's one of the great similes of a lotus. So if somebody criticizes you, scolds you, pees all over you, remember to be like a lotus. Nothing sticks. Once your husband has stopped scolding and shouting at you, you're exactly the same as when you started. Nothing sticks. And if someone praises you, you're the most wonderful wife in the whole world. I'm so lucky to have met you. Oh, I'm blessed. then after all that rubbish is stopped, you like pouring Chanel number 5 over you, you're still the same old guy you were before. Praise and blame should not stick no more than urine or Chanel number 5 sticks to a lotus. So whenever you get scolded or praised by the boss at work or the boss at home, always remember to be like a lotus. Now, the main reason for introducing the lotus simile is to know that a lotus is closed up at night time. And the outermost petals of the lotus are the most unpromising. If you didn't know what a lotus was, you wouldn't expect inside that hard, dusty, serrated exterior were the most beautiful and fragrant of petals. And this part of the simile is also important for me, and for you too, because sometimes you don't know what's inside this human being. I've taught many, many retreats, and a couple of years ago, I was teaching a retreat in our Jhana Grove retreat center opposite our monastery, and just down the road from there, there's a prison, maybe 6 kilometers away. And when this man came in to the retreat center, and he was covered with tattoos, really scraggly hair, and wearing thongs, I totally stereotyped him and said, "Sir, you've got the wrong place. This is a Buddhist meditation center. The prison is down the road." He said, "No, I've registered for your retreat." So embarrassed to check his name. Yeah, he was in there. So we're so desperate we accept anybody. So we're not actually. Usually a waiting list. So anyway, he came on my retreat, and he was the one who was a star meditator that time. He came into my interview and he started describing his meditation experiences, and it blew me away. He had just got an amazing deep jhana, no doubt about it. And that was a salutary lesson for me. I thought he'd be the last person who could get a jhana, simply because I looked at his outermost petals and I thought, no way. And all these really nice, kind, peaceful people, they were still falling asleep after 9 days. It told me, you can't judge who's going to do these jhanas and who isn't. And also, there's in every one of you, there's no one here who is unable to open up yourself to get the jhanas. It may look unpromising, but deep inside those outermost petals is the most amazing, beautiful petals. It also helps me whenever I've gone into jails and actually taught meditation to rapists, child molesters, murderers. That's only the outermost petals of their lotus. When you start opening them up, it's so surprising what you find inside. So, that's the lotus flower. How do you open up a lotus to find out what's inside? Unexpectedly, surprisingly beautiful stuff. What you do is, in the morning, when the sun comes up, the warmth and the light of the sun are what opens up the lotus. The warmth and light of the sun hits the outermost petals of the lotus, and they open out to reveal the next layer of petals. They receive the warmth and light of the sun, and they open up to allow the warmth and the light of the sun to hit the second level of petals, and they open up. When one opens up, it gives the opportunity for the next level to receive the warmth and light of the sun so they can open up as well. That is how a lotus opens up. And the deeper you go into the lotus, the more beautiful, fragrant, and subtle are the petals. And that's just like the human being. You are all lotuses. And inside, you cannot imagine, second guess, the beauty, the fragrance, the bliss the purity inside each one of you. I couldn't even judge that man who looked more like an inmate than a potential jhana candidate. I was totally wrong. And I took that as a great lesson in everybody, each one of you. Yes, inside of you, there is these incredible deep meditation states. How do you open yourself up to reveal those things? The warmth and light of the sun stands for kindness and mindfulness. The warmth, the kindness, the light, the awareness, the mindfulness. And that's all you do. So you look at your body, aware and kind. Kind enough to find the best posture. Kind enough to relax on a chair or to put your legs out or whatever you need to do. Mindfulness and kindness means your body is no longer a problem and it opens out to see what's inside. If your body is still irritating, aching, itching, sneezing, it means you've got work to do. You can't really put the body aside. You might try and it will interrupt you. If you look after the body and relax it, then you can leave it alone. You can go inside. And the next layer of petals, again, is your mind. But first of all, with that mind, there is the thinking. But the main layer of petals on the inside is what I call the layer of time. Because most of our thinking is the plans and expectations and demands for the future, our goals. And also all of our past, our history, our trauma. So that's the next layer of petals you see, which is quite coarse and rough, but it's still petals. How do you open that out to go inside time, into the present moment? Present moment awareness is important, but very few people tell you how to do it. You can't say, I will be present. Even that, saying, I will be present, is meaning somewhere in the future. So instead, you look at this mind, and with awareness, and with kindness. What I call, you look at even your past with kindness. Whoever did that to you, oh, they're going to pay for that. Poor things. You don't have to seek revenge. Karma will get them. So, you don't need to plot how you're going to punish them afterwards. Instead, give them kindness. They may have thought they were doing the best. They may have, imagined that they were being kind, but it didn't really work out that way. Maybe it was because the way they were treated before, they knew no better, or they were tired. So always give the past the benefit of the doubt. Be kind to people, and be kind to your past. And if you are kind to your past, it becomes soft and very easy to let go. If you have all this, what you have done and how you have hurt other people, you be kind to that. Well, it seemed to be a good idea at the time. I'm allowed to make mistakes. I can forgive myself. Never mind me. It's okay. There. If you are kind to your past, it's easy to let it go. If you hate your past, it will be there with you until you die and beyond. So awareness and kindness to your past is how you let it go. And as for your future, you don't try and ignore your future. And you don't try and suppress it. If it comes up, you're aware of it and be kind to it. The way to overcome fear and anxiety was taught to me by an English philosopher this English philosopher is usually well known. In fact, there was a film made about him not so long ago. His name is Winnie the Pooh. You get so much wisdom from the comics. For example, the other nice piece of wisdom I got earlier on, about a year ago, was from the famous cartoon series called Peanuts. And it's interesting, in these cartoons, human beings are usually the dumb ones. The animals are so smart. And think about it. Like a dog. A dog doesn't have to get up and go to work on a Monday morning and worry about health care and worry about paying the bills. The only job of a dog is actually to sleep, to eat, and, you know, when it's called upon, you know, to go for a walk with you. That's its only task, maybe to wag its tail every now and again to get something from you. And for that, it can sleep all day with no stress and with no worries at all. So who is the smartest animal in the United States? It's not human beings, is it? You have to work so hard to feed the dog. And the dog just lays there and sleeps all day. Anyway. So, where was I with this one? Being kind. How did I get into dogs on this one? I don't know, anyway. A Snoopy the dog. And then go back to that, to Winnie the Pooh. Crikey, I really go off on tangents. I don't know where I've got to come from. But anyway, Winnie the Pooh. No, first of all, Snoopy the dog. Snoopy the dog and Charlie Brown. That Charlie Brown said something which most Buddhists would agree with, but was totally overcome, beaten by the dog Snoopy. Charlie Brown said, "You know, one day we will all die. Can you find any fault with that?" Snoopy could, and I'm with Snoopy on this one. One day we will all die. That's so negative. What Snoopy said, yes, but most days we don't die. That's admitting the truth of life, but with a much more positive attitude. So anyway, I like some cartoons. And this one, Winnie the Pooh, if you remember that he had a best friend called Piglet. And Piglet was very small. And like many small people, they feel so vulnerable that they are just so afraid. And so they were walking through the forest when there was a huge storm. And as they were walking through the storm, first leaves were falling off, and then twigs, and then branches, and then whole trees smashed down onto the ground. And poor old Piglet was getting more and more afraid, until his anxiety got so strong, he grabbed Pooh by the paw and said, "I can't go on any longer. What would happen if a tree fell when we were underneath it?" Which was a real possibility. And even Winnie the Pooh was scared for a second. But then, his great wisdom, what arises from bare awareness. This is the title of my next book coming out soon. Bare awareness kicked in. And he said, yeah, what would happen if a tree fell when we were underneath it? But what would happen if a tree didn't fall when we were underneath it? And that was looking at the future with a positive mind. All fear is looking at the future with a negative mind. Being kind to the future is what overcomes fear. What would happen if? Why do we always add something negative? And so we say, what would happen if something good happened? And then we have no fear and anxiety. We are kind to the future. That's how we let go of the future. Awareness and kindness. One day we will die. Most days we don't die. One is negative, the other one is kind. Both are truthful. So that way we can totally let go of the future through kindness and awareness. And so that layer of petals where all grief, anger, fear and anxiety, that's where they live in the past and future. You go inside. The petal opens up. And when you open up, present moment, just now, that is a very beautiful and fragrant layer of petals. I say, if that's all you ever get in your meditation, that's really good enough. But there you have the beautiful present moment layer of petals. Because you're being aware and kind. And then you watch this present moment. And then what happens is that opens up until you get the silent present moment awareness. Because you're kind to this moment, you don't complain about it. You don't judge it. You're aware and there's nothing to say. There was a couple who were over in Perth and they were just knew each other so well they never needed to speak to one another. It wasn't that they had an argument and I'm not going to speak to her anymore. They didn't need to speak. They were in harmony together. Have you ever noticed why couples shout at each other? Why do you need to shout? You only need to shout if you are distant from one another. Shouting shows how far you have grown apart. But when you're really close together, then you don't need to shout, you whisper, "Darling, I love you. You're so nice." When you are close together, you whisper. When you are far apart, you shout. That's the psychology when people shout at one another. Emotionally, they're separate, a long way apart. That's why you need, or think you need, to shout. But when it gets to saying anything, sometimes you don't need to say things. Which means you go deep inside the lotus to the silent awareness. Why do you need to say things? Why do you need to try and capture this world in labels and ideas? At our Bhikkhuni monastery in Perth, sometimes they ask you to give talks. Yeah, you give sermons and lectures, but people forget about it afterwards. So demonstrations are far more powerful. So I needed to go to the restroom. They call it toilet over in Australia. So I asked them, "Where's a toilet?" And they said, "You know where it is. I built the place." But I said, no, where is it? So just over there, you can see the door, it's got toilet written on it. So I went there and I pretended to urinate on the door. "What are you doing, you crazy monk?" "So where, that's where you told me the toilet was," and actually says it on the top there, "toilet." Said, "Stupid monk, that is not the toilet, that's just a sign. The toilet's inside." And I was just doing that, going over the top, because that is the problem. The word is not the thing. The word just points you to the thing. And once the word has done its job, you don't need to keep writing down those words. So, an experiment for you, a demonstration. When I'm talking, again, listen to the reaction in your mind. It's not what I did yesterday, it's a different thing. Peace. 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 After you say that word, the mind moves in the direction of the meaning. I had to say it a few times, and after those few times you didn't need the word anymore. You'd gone towards the meaning. And that's the only reason we have these words, to point to the meaning. But unfortunately, all we have is the words left. We've forgotten the meaning. So when you get silent, you don't need to say anything anymore. You have the meaning. That is why that next layer of petals of silent awareness is so wonderful. And John would know this monk. One of my favorite monks was a monk called Ajahn Tate. And I went to see him a couple of times. But this one time I went to see him, had all these questions about meditation, about the Dhamma. And he was such a famous monk at the time, I had to put my name down, like going to see an appointment with the therapist and wait my turn. But it was worth it because I had all these questions I really needed to ask. And this, of all the monks I've ever met, you know, including Ajahn Chah, this one actually, you know, he looked like an arahat. He smelt like one. He behaved like one. All my ideas of what an enlightened being was, that was him. And when I went inside, all my questions just totally vanished. I was so silent. Automatically, I couldn't stop it. And I was so happy and content that the only thought which came up in my mind was they're going to have to drag me out of here in chains with an elephant to pull them. I'm not going to leave it. I'm going to die here. I never wanted to leave. And the reason was there was such incredible peace and compassion coming from this monk. I didn't need any questions. You could feel the answers. And that's actually where somebody made this wonderful simile that everybody, or at least most people, have spikes coming out of their bodies. Invisible spikes, which you cannot see. Some people's spikes are so long and so sharp. If they just come into this room, you feel uncomfortable. You get scratched. You know those people, they're really angry, frightening people. Most people have got average spikes. You can be sitting next to them, you don't feel anything. But you get too close, get into their personal space, you get scratched. Even some of your people you live with, you know, your partner. Yeah, you can get very close to them. Get too close, you'll get scratched. But there are some people who've got no spikes on them at all. You can be whoever, and they will not scratch you. They will not judge you. That you can be a multiple murderer, and they will just love you to bits. And those people are just so beautiful to be around. That's why when I came across this great monk, absolutely no spikes. I had lots of defilements and stupidities. They didn't matter anymore. It was just like being respected. Damaged tree that I belonged. I felt totally accepted and loved and peaceful. And that's why my mind went so silent. It was the kindness and the love, the awareness and the kindness which just stopped all the thinking. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. Had all these questions you wanted to ask someone, and you came up to them and just, you didn't need to ask any questions. All those questions were just an agitation of the mind, a sign you weren't peaceful. And that's actually where the questions get answered. Not by giving explanations, but by peace and kindness. You don't need to ask any questions when you have the answer right in front of you. So, you go deep inside the lotus to the silent awareness. That's so gorgeous. Even in our modern world, to get silence is such a rare thing in this world. There's aircraft overhead, mobile phones demanding your attention. You don't own your cell phone. The cell phone owns you. And being in a place like Australia, that's very quiet. But it's still not peaceful enough. So that's why the mine monks, bless them, they built me a cave. And in my cave, it's my hidey hole. I hide from the monks. Two doors, I lock both of them. And so I don't care what the monks are up to. They'll be kidding each other, having sex with the nuns. I don't care. I'm in my cave, and that's it. Don't quote me on that, by the way. It's so silent in there. And that's why I love silence. As soon as you get into a quiet, silent place, your mind becomes silent. And that's a beautiful part of the meditation. It's gorgeous, silent awareness. It's profound. All wisdom comes from silence. It never comes from thinking and debating and arguing. When you're silent and kind, it's amazing just the wisdom which you find. So that becomes the next layer of petals, silent awareness. You don't need to give things a name. You know you're there. Who needs a guidebook to Paris when you're right inside of Paris? You're there. The guidebook, yeah, it's sort of accurate, but it's not as good as actually being there. So, you're silently aware, just mindful, just kind, and the silent awareness opens up. And inside the silent awareness, as I mentioned already, you find your breath, your breathing, the last thing moving. You don't go looking for it and choosing it. It comes to you. You're opening up the lotus. This amazing breath. And many of you who follow other traditions notice the importance of the breath as a spiritual vehicle in so many different traditions. The pranayama, you know, of some of the Hindu mystical traditions. They're going into the cosmic breath. It's the breath. The word, you know what the word for breath is in Latin? Animalis. It's where we get animal from. The same as in Pali. Now, anapana sati, that's the breath. And for those of you, you know, who take five precepts as Buddhists, panatipata, panatipata. It's the same word, it's an animal. It's the same as with breath. The idea of a breath and life together is just so close. So this comes up to you, the breath. You don't go looking for it. And it's just a peaceful thing to watch. Watch the breath go in, the breath go out. Often I wonder, why is it when you just leave it alone, is it so easy to watch? So comforting. And I had the theory that each one of us, we started this life in our mother's womb. And imagine being a being in a mother's womb. Going up and down with the rhythm of her breathing. Ever since you can remember, for those who remember time in the womb, you can feel that reassuring, that loving rhythm of your mother's breath. And even when you were breastfeeding on her tummy, up and down, with the rhythm of your mother's breath. Psychologically, it has to be one of the most comforting, reassuring rhythms for the human form. That's why you just leave it alone, you can spend hours there. So, inside the lotus, the breath. And for goodness sake, don't try and control it. Just be aware and be kind. Care for your breathing, that's all. It goes in and out by itself. Look, I'm over 65 years of age now. My breath has not let me down yet. So thank you, breathing. Have you ever had gratitude towards your breath? Thank you for looking after me for all these years. Bringing this energy-giving, life-giving oxygen, which now allows me to do my job and my work and my practice, and taking out all the waste products of carbon dioxide, which happen to be the gift to all that's green and photosynthesized in this world. Your breath connects you with the plant world. And the plant world gives you the oxygen, It's a great symbiotic sharing. It connects you with all that's green. So, I think like that, and wow, my breath is amazing. I actually respect it, I don't take it for granted, but I don't control it. It's my friend. So you watch this breath in this deep meditation, it becomes, opens out, you're just kind to your breath, respectful, aware, and that opens out to the delightful breath. Oh, it's so beautiful. And I always call that like a pivot point in meditation. When you experience a delightful breath, you've opened up those petals. That is absolutely wonderful. You don't need any effort anymore. You're just enjoying yourself. And one of the reasons I teach meditation is to get people to that point. No, not really worrying about nimittas and jhanas, because that point, you're on the top of the hill, you're going to fall down. You're going to roll down. It's going to happen. Once you get to the delightful breath, nimittas and jhanas are just a matter of time. Because in a delightful breath, effortless, you're enjoying yourself. Just stay there, because you don't want to do anything else. So when you get the delightful breath, just aware, kindness quite natural, delightful breath opens up. Inside that delightful breath, the breath is now gone. Instead, you have this beautiful light, the nimittas. I was mentioning them yesterday. And please, you don't do anything. Just be kind. Be aware. That's all. And part of awareness and part of kindness is being patient. People saying after one day, said, Ajahn Brahm, I sacrificed so much today to come here and I never got jhanas. That is, no, I told you, don't come with any goals here. Be patient. But there's two types of patience, especially in meditation. The patience, which is not really patience, where people make huge mistakes, is waiting for something to happen. You're waiting in the future. If you wait for something to happen, it's here, and you're not looking where it's happening. You're looking over there in the future. It's like the mailman comes and delivers, but you're not paying attention. You're looking in the future. So you're not looking in your own mailbox. So that's one type of waiting which never works, waiting for something to happen. You're not in the present moment anymore. Waiting in this moment, not waiting in the future. If you can do that, then you're just here with this delightful breath. And it just comes by itself. It's beautiful little nimitta. And you just wait on the nimitta. You don't wait for something to develop. I don't know how many times I've got the question, I get to the nimitta, what do I do next? Come on. How many times do I have to be taught? There is no next. And there is no doing. Just hang out there. Chill out with your nimitta. Isn't that good enough? It's amazing. Just these are powerful states of mind. People still want something more. And they get the first jhana and say, I want the second jhana. Oh, come on. People are never satisfied. So if you understand what we're talking about here, you're just kind. This is good enough for me. You're at peace. Aware and kind. And you find all these things, they just happen. The nimitta, this beautiful light, gets stronger and stronger. And you just go to the center of it. You open out this layer of petals is so gorgeous anyway. If nimitta opens out, and you get something which is even more gorgeous. You know what's really weird about these states? Sometimes you get to these incredible, blissful, profound states, and you think, well, this is it. You can't get any more than this. Just have you ever been climbing mountains, and you get to the top of a mountain, you find there's another one up there, even higher. And that's sometimes what it's like. Unbelievable. You think this is the ultimate bliss, and you find there's something more ultimate than the ultimate bliss. Are there any mathematicians here? You know that infinity? There's so many different levels of infinity. There is a number infinitely bigger than infinity. When I first heard that, that's really cool. Because I thought infinity means the biggest amount ever. But they just call that alpha null. Alpha 1 is the number infinity bigger than infinity. And it just goes on forever. there's another number infinitely bigger than the number infinitely bigger than infinity. Really blows your mind. I like it. I like having my mind blown. Going to other levels you never thought was possible. But that is truthful. That can be proven. That's fact. To show you how limited our imagination is. But here we go to a bliss bigger than any bliss you could possibly imagine. This lotus, when you get inside of it, wow. Stuff you never expected. And inside that nimitta you find the first chakra. You don't do anything. You can't do anything. There's a mindfulness and a kindness remain, the bliss. And it might open up into a second chakra. Then what do? Nothing. Mindful and kind, and it opens up into a third chakra. Into a fourth chakra. Now, you're on a roll. And the immaterial jhanas, they open up until you get the last of the immaterial jhanas. Neither perception nor non-perception. You cannot really, when you come out afterwards, understand whether you were perceiving or you weren't. The object was nothing, there was no perception at all, but you were perceiving no perception. A dichotomy, but that's the best way you can describe it. That is the last layer of petals. So thin, so profound, they hardly exist. And then, that opens up to the jewel inside of the lotus. You know, want to know what that is? Find out for yourself. I'm not telling. Because if I said so, would you believe me? Would you believe me? If you said yes, then you're stupid for believing other people. If you said no, then it's a waste of time me telling you. But that's actually how it works. And that's a lovely method because it does, lovely simile, it does actually inform you of what's going to happen in meditation. Of the stages, the landmarks of meditation. But it also emphasizes how those landmarks are reached. Not through effort, not through striving, not through wanting, but just with a very simple awareness and kindness. It is the warmth and light of the sun which open the lotus. Nothing else. Your kindness and your awareness. Nothing else. If you do that, you're on a roll. Lotuses open up, and you'll be so amazed what's inside of you. Wow. Just like you read in the ancient times, you do that yourself. And the reason I say this is because unexpectedly, not just guys with tattoos all over them, as I said in Manhattan, if you haven't got jhana yet, maybe it's because you don't have enough tattoos. That's only a joke, don't go to the tattoo parlor. But everyone can do it. And the other thing is, so many people actually do get this bliss and they get nimittas and they wonder what the heck is going on because it's never explained to them. And a classic story, and this is my last story before we actually do some meditation before lunch, was when I was teaching a retreat in Penang. Well, the organizers begged me, can I please serve counsel this woman who had a psychotic experience and she'd been to psychologists and psychiatrists in Malaysia. No one could actually help her. Ajahn Brahm, can you give it a try? So always willing to help out, do whatever I can. So she came in, said, well, what happened? And she described what she'd occurred. And I was so pleased. I said, that was a jhana. You flipped it. You pressed the letting go button. And it happened. And I also explained some of the things she hadn't told me. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, it was like that. So, well, it's not a psychotic experience. You just had a jhana. You probably won't ever get it again because you flipped it. But well done. And she went away so happy. And it just was reinforcing this idea that often people just, they let go, they feel content, they stop striving, and they have these experiences. And this, these things happen when you least expect them, when you're least trying. And it's important we know just what happens, you know, when we really let go, and just how peaceful, how blissful, how what people call like religious experiences, how they happen. And so that you understand their causes, recreate the causes and experience these things for yourself. And have a wonderful time. Later on, we can talk about why, the meaning of it. It's not just a bliss out, but why not bliss out? What's wrong with just blissing out? People want to be wise and miserable. Me, I want to be wise and happy. So anyway, that's how it works. Just before we do a meditation, at 2 or 3 minutes time, is there any question before we actually go forward? Because I haven't had a chance for any questions yet. This is put your hand up questions. Is it all clear about, you know, what the path of meditation is, how not to do it, and how to let it happen? Okay. Okay, so if you need to go toilet, the more letting go, in pieces, off you go quickly. And in 5 minutes, we'll start the meditation. This is amazing, just without telling you, everyone is really good. You're not speaking to one another, which is great. Because we have a tradition called noble silence in many retreats. But so many people don't know what noble silence is. Noble silence is not being silent, not speaking. It's not speaking when there's no reason to. So, for example, if there is a fire, you don't sort of try and mime it. That is not noble silence, that's stupid silence. If there's something to say, say it. But don't do it stupid talk where there's no real reason to. That's called noble silence. So if it's, what's that old joke about the four monks meditating when one of them sneezed? And the first monk said, bless you. The second monk, you have just broken your vow of silence. Third monk said, so have you. And the fourth one said, I'm glad I'm the only one here who can keep quiet. So, that's not noble silence. So that means that if there's something to say, you say it. For the real noble silence, which I practice on the retreats, it's difficult to do here because there's a schedule, is when I teach a retreat, we don't have schedules. People get up when they feel like it, and they meditate as long as they feel like. If it's only for 5 minutes, then they get up. If it's for 2 hours, they sit. And there is no bells. That's why I call it no bell silence. This thing here is the problem. Because that happened to me so many times. You know, sometimes I was just waiting for the teacher to ring the bell. I was really hurting and restless. I wanted to get up. And so I had, you know, like you do when you really want to get up, you start sort of fantasizing and planning. So what I was planning is getting one of these pea shooters so I can hit the gong and get up when I wanted to get up. I don't know if you ever thought of that, but in a retreat. But the other thing is sometimes having such a peaceful time, and this damn teacher would ring the gong. Imagine that was the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, and he's about to get in line, gong. We would have had a Buddha at all. So, in the experience, I hate bells. So that's noble silence. And, to complete the bad joke, if you have noble silence, and some people actually do win the Nobel Peace Prize. Glad to get some peace instead of bells. Stop being at school again, isn't it? Okay. those people who just fed up with my jokes, there's already one person leaving, had enough bad jokes. No, let's just go to the toilet. Or the restroom, sorry. So if you like to sit down and get yourself comfortable. At this time, I'll only start the beginning of the meditation with some words, and then it's up to you. I'm just unfortunately ringing the gong at 12 o'clock for lunch. Very good. Don't forget the most important part of your posture. Smile, yeah. This is not going to the dentist. This is going to enlightenment. Sorry, I apologize to any dentists here. You're a dentist. I apologize. Please forgive me. I can't forget this. I'm afraid of dentists. There's one dentist, he just does my teeth over in Australia. And there was one teeth was actually cracked. He had no choice but to actually take it out. So he took it out, but what happened, he realized I was getting more and more well known and famous. So he kept it, an investment, as a relic. But because of his bad intentions, when he moved office, he lost it. And that's when he told me. And now I'm so scared of going to him, because he might take another one out. But it's not necessary. Just because of the financial incentive. It's really a funny life as a monk. So anyway. So sit down, close your eyes. Smile. Makes it easy. And remember, you're spending the next half an hour hanging out with your best friend. Chilling out together. Not controlling one another, but enjoying the company of your mind. So be kind enough to your body just to really feel it. Don't have too much dogma and hard opinions of what the correct posture is and what the wrong posture is. Discover it every time you meditate by awareness and kindness. And once you are getting your correct posture, if there's any part of you which is tense, just zoom in on it, focus on it, don't run away. The pain, the ache, is a cry for your attention and for your kindness. So just compassionately be aware. A little ache, maybe a headache, maybe an irritation in your nose, maybe some hay fever allergies, or just an out-and-out cold. Maybe it's just pain in your liver or your spine or your guts. Arthritis, a tumor. Don't be afraid. Just go right into it. And find out how to relax it. How to soothe it. My theory is when you do sort of stop tensing up around it, you allow the healing to happen. Body is great in its powers of healing if you can only let it do its job. So focusing on the part of the body which is irritating, painful, that's mindfulness, allows you to have feedback and learning just how to relax. You're also learning what kindness is, what compassion is, what letting go is. Those three things are what relaxes and heals. It's also later on what totally stops and undermines all questions and all agitation of the mind. We use it for agitation on the body, first of all, to try and get the body to be nice and peaceful and calm and comfortable. Once the body is relaxed and comfortable, look at your peaceometer. That's essential, just because sometimes we're so agitated, it's a waste of time doing any form of meditation, which is we're too restless. So learn how just to calm your mind down, first of all. Be mindful of your peaceometer and train, learn. What makes you peaceful? What makes you agitated? And once you're peaceful enough, it's time to open up your lotus. Be aware, be kind to whatever it is in front of you in this moment. Now the most important time, the experience in front of you, the most important. Those two together are a great description of mindfulness. And care for this. And see if you can notice your lotus opening up. The next stage is always within the stage you're on right now. The next layer of petals is right inside of this. You don't need to go away from this or get rid of it. Go inside of it. And that's what mindfulness and kindness achieve. So I'm going to break the noble silence in another 25 minutes. It's coming close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? What worked, what didn't work?